Hey everybody, welcome to Adoptees Crossing Lines, the not so feel good podcast. If you're looking for something that's grateful adoptees, this probably isn't the one for you. Go ahead and keep scrolling and looking for another podcast. That's not what we're about over here. Hi everyone, welcome to another episode of Adoptees Crossing Lines. I'm Leah, your host, and for today's episode, I'm going to be talking about the power of community, specifically the healing power of community, some of the challenges that are faced. But before I get into that, I want to read a quote by bell hooks. Bell hooks says, "One of the most vital ways we sustain ourselves is by building communities of resistance, places where we know we are not alone." If you've never read anything by bell hooks, I highly recommend it. That is from her book, Yearning, Race, Gender, and Cultural Politics. So I know that a community means different things to different folks. But for me, when I think about community, I feel like everything I learned that community is or isn't begins with my adoption. So for a lot of adoptees, they are born and immediately separated, bought and sold to the highest bidder. And then they are raised by their adopters, or they are forced to assimilate to their culture, their norms, their way of life. They may be raised by folks of a different race, which adds a whole nother layer to it. And I can't speak to that because I'm not a transracial adoptee, but I've learned so much from speaking with transracial adoptees. That's how your life begins, in separation. So you're separated from your parents. You're separated from any extended family that you could have had a relationship with, and immediately forced to be raised by strangers. And if you don't do what they think you should do, you can be returned. You can be rehomed as if you're an animal and not a human being with feelings and connections and attachments, as if you didn't bond with the person who gave birth to you for up to 9 months. And all of that is erased and disregarded so that you can meet the needs of these strangers. And then adoptees are highly, highly pathologized, diagnosed with oppositional defiance disorder, reactive attachment disorder. Is it that adoptees have these diagnoses? Or is it that you placed a child with a stranger and you expected them to form a bond or an attachment and there's no biological connection? Or is it that you believe that children, babies, are blank slates and that there isn't any sort of preverbal trauma? Because research tells us otherwise. But I digress. So for me, when I think about community, I think about all of those things. And I think about the people that I was raised with. And I think about the communities that I was raised in, right? I was raised in a very conservative, evangelical community. I was raised in a Black community. I was raised in a community of silence. I was raised in a community of compliance. And all of these communities that I was raised in ultimately shaped me or had some bearing on who I am today. Whether I'm a part of these communities or not, they affected my personhood in some way, shape, or form. And I think this is true for everyone, adopted or not. But I think where the distinction maybe lies is that many of us didn't choose these communities to be a part of. Like, I don't know that if I wasn't raised in an evangelical family, I don't know that I would believe in God. But that is all that I ever knew. I didn't know anything different. I didn't have a choice to believe or say anything different. It wasn't safe for me. In 2020, early 2020, I had just gotten laid off from my job. And like the rest of the world, I was on a global lockdown. And I was sitting at home thinking about my adoption, my experience, and what I truly thought about it. Because for me, I was always very disillusioned with my adoption, with my experience. I felt like it was wrong. I felt like it didn't make sense. I didn't feel like it was a good thing. I didn't feel like it saved me. I felt like it just brought me pain and suffering. But the thing is, I never felt safe enough to speak out or speak up about my experiences because my adopters were well respected, well regarded, well revered in their respective communities. And so even when I did try to speak up about it, for the most part, people looked at me like I was crazy. And they would just tell me that these things weren't true. Like, no, they could never do that. They would never do this. Well, I've only experienced them in this way. And if there's one thing I've learned from being adopted, it's that people can present one way in public and be very charismatic and be completely different people behind closed doors, and no one will ever know or believe you. Because adoption is perceived as a benevolent thing. It's perceived as a system that saves children. It's perceived as a system that protects children. Nothing about the family policing system exists to protect or help children. The system exists to terrorize, police, investigate, and separate families. The system has its roots in slavery. You cannot reform that. In the same way that you cannot reform the police. You cannot reform a system that has its roots in slavery. A system that saw Black people as 3/5 of a person. You can't reform that. The only option is to abolish these systems. And if you've ever done any type of organizing or worked closely with grassroots and community organizations, you know that that is where the real work happens, because these folks are not outsiders coming in and trying to tell people how to run their lives. These are people who are in community with one another, who understand their community because they are a part of the community, and they're working together collectively, mutually, sometimes through mutual aid, to address a lot of these ongoing issues that are happening in these communities. I have never felt protected by any of these government agencies claiming to help us. I remember when I read through some of the paperwork about my adoption and about my mom. And at this point, this was all the information I had. It was just paperwork. And the way that social workers and psychiatrists and psychologists and all of these people described her. And the thing that sticks out to me the most in all of that paperwork and all of these ways that they contextualize my mom is that this woman was literally fighting to get her children back. And I can only imagine what it was like for my mom, as someone who was also adopted, to have been raised in an abusive environment that she ran away from, and to then have that same system terrorize you and take your children. I can only imagine the grief that my mother felt. I can only imagine the depths of her pain. I can only imagine her anger. And I think that if my mom had community support, I think that she might still be here. And I don't think that the state would have taken her children, because they never would have gotten involved to begin with. So often the state gets involved and they begin to surveil because of neglect. And neglect, to me, is just a racialized term for poverty. And instead of addressing the issue of poverty, the underlying causes of it, our government chooses to criminalize it. But we saw earlier in the pandemic, when the government found a way to help folks out. Granted, they could have done a whole lot more, right? The United States is funding a genocide right now in Palestine. And so we have billions and billions of dollars to fund a genocide. And we have billions and billions of dollars to fund family separation. But we don't have billions and billions of dollars to keep families together, to keep siblings together, to keep parents with their children, to keep extended family with their nieces, their nephews, their grandkids, whomever, their cousins. We don't have money for that because we don't place an emphasis on the collective and collective liberation. Western culture is so individualistic, and that has only caused us further harm. Anyways, so while I was in this global pandemic and lockdown, as I had all this time to think about my adoption and my experience, I began to look for spaces that were for adoptees. But what I found was spaces for adoptive parents, spaces for foster parents, but I didn't find spaces that centered the survivors of the family policing system. And so I started to look on Facebook to see if I could find some groups there. And I eventually found some groups. I found a group for Black adoptees, which is one of the first groups that I joined. And it was really helpful for me because growing up, I really didn't know other folks who were adopted. And in adulthood, when I did meet other adoptees, they were white. And so there were parts of my experience that they just couldn't relate to. And so finding this group was crucial for me. I ended up, you know, interacting with the group and making a really good friend from that group. And I'm thankful for that. And also, I shouldn't have had to search that hard to find those spaces. Because why are we centering the industry? Why are we centering adoptive parents? Why are we centering foster parents? Why are we not centering the survivors who are the most deeply impacted? So I started to keep looking and came across adoptee Twitter and TikTok. And, you know, this podcast was born from adoptee Twitter. And I've had so many opportunities to connect with so many folks and talk to so many people and amplify your stories and hear your stories. And it has been so liberating. It has been so liberating to know that we are not alone. It's hard to have a lived experience that many do not recognize as traumatic. You have people who say things like, oh, you're lucky you were adopted. Oh, I wish I was adopted. Or if someone is struggling to have children of their own, oh, you can just adopt. Adoption is not catchphrase, a tagline. These are people's lives that we're talking about. Living, breathing human beings. Sometimes I look back on my childhood and I think about what it would have been like to have the spaces that I have now as a kid, and what it would have been like to talk to other folks who were adopted or who spent time in foster care, and to be able to connect with them and to be able to build friendships with them. But that wasn't a priority. In the same way, it wasn't a priority for me to have the opportunity to grieve the loss of my parents. Both of my parents died when I was very young. And it's only been recently that I've really began to grieve their loss. And in particular, my mom. I have very, very complicated feelings around my father. But I miss my mom nearly every single day. I think about her all the time. And I really don't have a better way to describe it other than I feel like I'm grieving in reverse. It's like I just found out she died a couple of months ago and I'm starting from scratch. But the reality is I've always known that my mom died, but I just didn't have the space for that because I had parents. And it's interesting because in my experience, and I know in other adoptees that I've talked to, there's this fear from adopters that they're going to be replaced by our families. But it's like the whole act of adoption is an attempt to replace something already. So who's really doing the replacing? Community can and always will be a powerful thing. There is an African proverb that says, if you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. And I think about that. I heard about that a lot. I also think about the quote that it takes a village to raise a child. And I hear people repeat this quote often, but it's like, do you really understand what you're saying? Do you really believe what you're saying? Do you really believe in the power of community? Or is it more important for you to have a makeshift family? Is it more important for you to buy a child that you can play pretend with? Or is it important that that child grows up with their family, knows where they come from, and doesn't have their entire family and history erased? Because why do you need to change a child's name to love and care for them? Why do you need to change their birth certificate to love and care for them? Is it really about the child? Or is that about meeting your own needs that you have a sense of ownership? I said that earlier that without community, I don't think that I would be here. And I mean that quite literally. I have struggled with suicidal ideation since I was about 10 years old. That was the first time that ever came up for me. And I remember the response being, Black people don't commit suicide. And it's something that I won't ever forget. I won't ever forget being taken to a local psychiatric institution and being threatened and forced to sign this paper, knowing that I was just signing it to sign it at 10 years old because I knew I didn't want to be locked up. All the while I was still having my struggles, I just learned to struggle quietly. When I talk to other adoptees who tell me that they too struggle with suicidal ideation, of course, this isn't a club that I don't want anyone to be a part of, in the same way that I don't want anybody to be a part of the Dead Parent Club. But we're here. And once you get in the club, you pretty much have a lifetime membership. And I think when it comes to suicidal ideation, it makes a lot of people uncomfortable and they don't know what to do with it. But I think it really speaks to a larger point of what are the underlying issues? What are the underlying causes of this? Because it's really an indictment on society. And what can we do to fix these issues? I know for me, as a child, those ideations stemmed from the abuse that I was experiencing in what was supposed to and believed to be a safe and loving and supportive home. They also stemmed from not feeling like I belong. When I was a kid, I didn't know that my dad died. And so I always used to envision that he was just out there somewhere and he probably had a family, but he just didn't know that I existed. And that wasn't the truth. That wasn't what actually happened. But as a kid, that's like what I held on to because I wanted to know where I came from. I wanted to know what my family looked like. I wanted to know who they were. I wanted to know if we had things in common. There was so much that I wanted to know. And it wasn't until my last year of my 20s, but it's only been through my 20s that I've come to know just a little bit about who these people were. And that's a grave injustice to have to fight and search to figure out where you came from, to figure out who you look like. I used to hate the projects in school, the family tree projects and the bring in your baby picture and let's figure out who's who. I don't have any baby pictures and I can't tell you my family tree because I don't know where I come from. But I thought I was alone in so many of these thoughts. I was talking to someone the other day about how when I fill out paperwork in big letters, all capital letters, I write adopted. I want you to know, and I don't want you to start asking me all these questions because you don't have the decency to have a box for being adopted or for unknown medical history. And furthermore, have the decency to provide the proper testing for all of the various things because I don't know this information. Instead, you would just say, or rather say, oh, well, these things probably won't affect you because you don't know the history. When I think about the adoptee community, I think about the community as a whole. And I even think about it beyond the adoptee community. I think about survivors of the family policing system, right? Because those aren't just folks who are adopted. There's also folks who have spent time in foster care. Even within those two communities, there's micro communities, right? There are those of us who are abolitionists. There are those of us who are same race adoptees. There are those of us who are transracial adoptees. There are those of us whose parents have died. There are so many different communities within the larger community. But I think what binds us all together is this collective fight for liberation, this collective fight to envision and reimagine a world where no child has to experience this, this collective liberation to envision a world where we all have access to our records, to envision a world where we have access to medical testing, to envision a world where we can come back into community with our families, to envision a world where we have access to mental health care, to envision a world where folks aren't adopted, but community steps in. And community says, no, you will not take my children. You will not take their children. This is a fight that I may not see won in my lifetime. And I'm still going to continue to fight for this because I believe that children and families deserve a better future. I don't believe that any child should have to experience what any of us experienced. I don't believe that children should be separated from their families and have their entire identities erased. I don't believe that poverty should be criminalized. I don't believe that the state needs to be surveilling people for being poor. I don't think that a system that has its roots in slavery should continue to exist in 2024. Thank you so much for joining this week. As a reminder, we drop episodes every second and fourth Friday of the month. You can find us on TikTok and Instagram at Adoptees Crossing Lines and on Twitter at Adoptee Crossing. You can also send us an email at adopteescrossinglines@gmail.com. Remember that as Bell Hooks said, rarely if ever are any of us healed in isolation. Healing is an act of communion. Be sure to join us next time as we continue to heal and grow together.